The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Dave's Garden website, the Wonder Baby website, Garden Smart e-newsletter, and maybe from Carrots Love Tomatoes and Roses Love Garlic by Louise Riotti. We'll start with the Garden Smart e-newsletter. And this article is by Bonnie L. Grant, and it's titled Pocket Gardens. Pocket gardens allow you the opportunity to brighten a space with living plants in underutilized spaces. Special, unexpected pops of color and texture can soften even the sparest spaces, and all you need is a little bit of soil and a niche of space. Pocket garden design is a fun way to get creative with your unique space and enliven previously flat, boring parts of the outdoors. Here's some pocket garden information to get you started on developing your own unique style in the landscape. What is a pocket garden? The pocket garden is a design technique that has been used by gardeners for generations, but it has recently found a chic standing in the landscape world. What is a pocket garden? It can be a combination of scenarios, but the basic point is to add plants in small, unexpected ways to the landscape. Gardening can be a challenge in small spaces or in areas with little area for a garden plot or bed. This is when it's time to look outside the box and get creative with what you do have. One design strategy is creating pocket gardens. The premise is that you can tuck a plant, or two or three, almost anywhere. Planting some attractive greenery down stone stairs. Nestling a few succulents between pavers. Or even selecting some complementary flora that can be popped in the edges of a patio are all examples of pocket gardening. Dish gardens, containers, and hanging plants are also part of the pocket plan. Creative accessories and unique containers can help make the space special and distinctive to you. Pocket garden information. The first step to a pocket garden is to look around the space and consider the challenges and assets. Lighting, ability to provide water, theme, and many other considerations need to come into play. In most cases, maintenance will be an issue. Choose low-maintenance plants that can sustain themselves without much intervention. Succulents, alpine plants, some grasses, and spurge are excellent choices. The feel that you are trying to achieve is important, but so are plant needs. Use plants that have similar requirements in the small space for best results. An example might be a niche planting of clumping bamboo with containers of succulents as accents in a patio setting. The choices are endless, but the best pocket garden will have complementary textures and plant needs. Getting started with pocket garden design. Pocket gardens can be as simple as several matching planters of ornamental grasses along the driveway to succulents tucked into the rock wall that abuts a path. It's about creating interest where there was just man-made space. More intricate pocket design requires individual small beds among stonework or installed as part of the patio space. This does not require a professional, unless you are not up to building such accents. You can use containers to the same effect. Creating pocket gardens is an opportunity to express your individuality and refresh a space. You can even pocket garden a small herb garden outside the kitchen or a bed of colorful varietal lettuces. The mini garden spaces should suit your vision and purpose while providing plants with similar soil and cultivation requirements. And now from the Wonder Baby website. This article is Gardening with a Blind Child by Amber Bobnar. For those of us who live in parts of the world with seasons, there are really only a few months out of the year where you can go outside and plant a garden. And if you like to plant flowers and vegetables, then it is also your best chance to have your children learn about plants, dirt, and gardening. Children with visual impairments need the opportunity to get their hands into as many different projects as possible, and gardening has the added benefit of being one of those extremely hands-on activities. So let's all get outside and get our hands dirty. What blind kids can learn in the garden? Being outdoors, listening to the birds, and feeling the sunshine are benefit enough for a lot of kids. Also, feeling like they are part of a larger family project can give many kids a boost of confidence. But there are other learning opportunities you might want to focus on in your garden. Learn about plants. Talk to your child about how plants grow and what they need to grow. It may seem silly, but we read Sesame Street Library In the Garden to Ivan as a way to talk about plants. The book explains that seeds need dirt, water, and sun to grow. Yeah, it's pretty simple, but it gets the point across, and the book even plays sounds. This was a fun and silly way to introduce the concept of gardening to our son. Learn about clean and dirty. It's inevitable that you will get dirty in the garden, and that's a good thing. Many kids who are blind dislike getting their hands dirty or wearing gloves, so here's your chance to talk about clean versus dirty, or feel and try on gardening gloves, and to do it all in a fun environment. If your child hates the feel of dirt, see if you can convince them to touch the dirt with one finger really fast. That's it. And follow up with lots of praise. Next time, try two fingers or a pinch of dirt. Work your way up while you're playing and having fun. Learn about wet and dry. Elmo taught us that plants need water to grow, so I guess we'd better get out the hose. You can teach your child how to turn on the water and how to make sure the plants get enough water. If your child is sensitive to the feeling of getting wet, and a lot of children are, then you have another opportunity to play with water in a fun and relaxed environment. Learn about numbers. We do a lot of counting in our garden. How many green beans should we plant in a row? Let's count the seeds. How many strawberries are we growing on this plant? Let's find out. And our favorite, how many cherry tomatoes can we eat before we go into the house? Yum! This is a fun way to make counting real and tangible, which can make a big difference for children who are visually impaired. Learn about healthy eating. Probably the most important thing we're teaching our children in the garden is the importance of eating fresh fruits and vegetables. Flowers are fun to plant, too, but when you grow your own tomato or blueberry plant, your child may be more excited to eat from them. You could plant a collection of veggies that would work well in one pot, like tomatoes, basil, and zucchini, and then cook up some delicious tomato sauce for your spaghetti. Many blind kids are picky eaters who do not want to try new foods, so this may be a way to get your child to experiment with new flavors. Whatever you decide to plant, keep the lessons laid back and easy. The best way to learn in the garden is to have fun. Now from the Garden Smart e-newsletter, Growing Container Citrus, Fragrance, Fruit, and Fun by Pennington. Fresh-picked homegrown citrus isn't a luxury reserved for gardeners in a sunny, tropical zone. You can grow citrus trees in containers and enjoy their fragrance and zesty fruit, even in wintry northern homes. Short on garden space in any climate? Container citrus can deliver your freshness fix. All it takes is some simple citrus basics and you're on your way to growing your own. Standard citrus trees grow too big for indoors, but dwarf varieties are grafted onto special roots that limit their size and speed up fruiting. Growing them in containers keeps them smaller, too. If you're new to growing citrus, start with dwarf types known to flourish and fruit well indoors, such as improved Meyer lemon, Makrut, M-A-K-R-U-T, and key limes, kumquats, and calamondin oranges fit the bill. Shop for trees at least 2 to 3 years old, the age when they're mature enough to produce and support fruit. Garden retailers know this information, so you don't need to become a pro overnight. The trees may seem small now, but even dwarf varieties and regular pruning, most container citrus trees will eventually measure near 6 feet tall. Images of potted Mediterranean citrus can steer you toward big pots, but start small. Extra soil complicates moisture control, so work your way up in pot size as the trees grow. For small trees, a 12-inch diameter container, nurseries call this a 5-gallon pot, is perfect for starters. Mature trees need pots double that width and at least 18 to 24 inches deep. This gives roots growing room and prevents tippy, top-heavy trees. Any pot material works as long as there's ample drainage holes. Placing a wheeled plant dolly underneath simplifies handling and moving trees. Lightweight resin or fiberglass planters offer good alternatives. Citrus trees prefer their soil evenly moist and never soggy. Soil that stays too dry or too wet is trouble. Commercial potting mixes labeled for cactus, palms, and citrus provide a good balance to retain moisture yet drain freely and quickly. Citrus roots need air, so planting depth is important. The area where the tree trunk starts to flare out at its base should always be slightly exposed. When replanting, firm the soil underneath. With the right soil and container, citrus trees aren't that different from other houseplants, except for favorite blossoms and fruit, of course. Provide these simple needs and reap rewards. Citrus needs at least 6 to 8 hours of bright daily light, more the better. Placing trees near southern or southwest windows works best. Natural lights shift with seasons, so adjust accordingly. If you're short on sunlight, grow lights can make up the difference. Never let pots dry out completely, but avoid overwatering. Allow the soil to dry about 2 to 3 inches deep and then water thoroughly so the water runs through the drainage holes. Test your soil by hand or use a soil moisture tester. During spring and summer growth, containers may need water daily. In winter, water just enough to keep the soil moist. Citrus trees need generous amounts of nitrogen plus essential trace nutrients. Needs increase as trees mature. Because of extra watering containers need, fertilizers can leach away. A citrus-specific plant food used at planting and ongoing feedings provides the special nutrients citrus trees need. Limit fertilizer in fall and winter as growth slows. Regular pruning helps limit the tree size and promotes bigger, better fruit. Don't be shy about pruning. Just wait until the trees flower and set the fruit so you don't accidentally prune away your trees. Trim off thorns and any roots or shoots that form near the soil. Normal household temperatures suit citrus fine and most withstand brief near freezing cold. However, avoid placing your tree near drafts or heating and air conditioning ducts. Container citrus can summer outside, but keep them inside until frost danger passes in spring. Then move them gradually so they acclimate over several weeks. Or they may drop their ripening fruit. So move them back inside before the first fall frost strikes. When trees summer outside, pests can seize the opportunity and even hitch a ride into your home come fall. If pests strike outdoors, a combination fungicide-insecticide makes treatment easy and keeps your citrus ready for the move back inside. With container citrus in your home, you'll enjoy the sweet fragrance of late winter citrus blossoms. By the time winter rolls around again, you'll be feasting on fruit. When fragrance fills the house and fresh fruit hits the table, you'll be glad you gave container citrus a try. Now from Dave's Garden website. Don't lay any certain plans for the future. It's like planting toads and expecting to raise toadstools. That was said by Unknown. And now, Black-Eyed Susan by Sharon Brown. If you plant Black-Eyed Susans beside your door, no ants will enter, but the butterflies, oh, the butterflies, they will just come right on in. Aunt Bet taught me everything. She was an excellent teacher, but there was a time or two when I did a few things my own way. The Day of the Butterflies was one of those times. Memories are funny things. When I remember growing up in the mountains of southeastern Kentucky, flowers of all kinds bounce around in my mind. Could be because I gathered so many different flowers with Aunt Bet and learned wondrous things about each one of them. I made clover chains to decorate my hair. I used flower dyes to paint my face and hair and any other body part that needed decorating. I hung flowers from the rafters. I placed them in jelly jars filled with water. I made corsages and crowns and pranced around like a princess. Flowers were my whole life there in the mountains. My favorites were usually blue, but I dearly loved black-eyed Susans. There was something about them that always cheered me up and made me smile. Rudbeckia hirta was most common in the mountains, although there were other varieties as well. It isn't uncommon to see them growing along medians all over Kentucky these days, most likely because black-eyed Susans were named the 2007 Flower of the Year in Kentucky by the wildflower enthusiasts. Aunt Bet told me all those many years ago that the Native Americans used the root of the flower for tea to treat worms, colds, and externally as a wash for sores, snake bites, and swelling. The root juice was used for earaches. Since she had a great deal of respect for what the Native Americans believed, she used the black-eyed Susan for the same remedies. Black-eyed Susans are easy to grow. They like well-drained soil and even thrive in clay soils and grow in full to partial sun. They are a favorite of butterflies and songbirds. And if you have the space, you can use them to create a little wildlife habitat in your backyard. They are pollinated by bees, wasps, and other insects. Several different butterflies like this plant, and the pearl crescent is one species that perches on the high center of the bloom and is attracted to the yellow color. If you plant them with purple coneflowers, maybe some asters and a butterfly weed or two, you're sure to attract songbirds and butterflies, as well as creating a beautiful cutting garden. The blooms last May through September. Now you are very well informed. Let's go back several years to Aunt Bet's yard. I have mentioned many times if it didn't have a purpose, Aunt Bet had little to do with it. She had a soft spot for me, though, and she knew I dearly loved to decorate, especially for her. Actually, I'm not sure it was a soft spot she had. It was more like a tolerance. So I asked her one day if I could plant some black-eyed Susans in her yard. I really doubt she paid a lot of attention to what I was asking, because she just nodded her head and went right on tinkering around the garden. The black-eyed Susans grew along the creek that ran along the side of her garden behind her house. All I had to do was jump over the creek with my trusty garden spoon and dig up a few clumps and bring them back and plant them wherever I wanted. I wanted to plant them by her front yard and back doors, so I did. By late summer, those few clumps had taken on a life of their own and spread across the back of the house as well as the front, and most of the time they were covered with butterflies. Now, I knew for a fact that ants did not tread where black-eyed Susans grew. The bristly hairs on the stems make it nearly impossible for ants to pass, so I thought I was doing a favor for Aunt Bet by keeping the ants out of her kitchen. One day, when she was tidying up the last of her vegetable garden, I was back at the house getting my usual drink of water. There was nothing like the taste of a dipper full of cold water from Aunt Bet's well, located right in the middle of the backyard. Okay, stop here for a minute and picture this. Aunt Bet did not have screens over her windows or her doors. The front door stood open to let the air flow straight through the house and out through the open back door. The huge trees in front kept the air cool, so her house was really comfortable, even on the hottest summer day. I noticed hundreds of black swallowtail butterflies floating around the black-eyed Susans that were still in full bloom as I left the house, and I remember thinking that they were sure pretty dancing around on a bed of yellow flowers. I went on back to the garden to help Aunt Bet. She didn't have much left to do, so we finished up and pretty quickly walked through her back door into the kitchen. Let me tell you, that kitchen was alive with black swallowtail butterflies, just flitting around, checking everything out. Aunt Bet stood there, frozen, and not a hair on her head moved. So did I. She finally opened her mouth to speak, just as one sat right down in the middle of that white hair. I giggled, then laughed right out loud and did a little dance in the middle of the kitchen floor. My sudden movement caught those butterflies by surprise, or maybe it was my giggles that did it, because they all gathered up in a group and proceeded to float right on through the house and right out the front door, where they stopped for a minute to kiss the front yard black-eyed Susans goodbye. Finally, Aunt Bet breathed again. "Well, I never in all my born days ever seen a sight like that," she said. I never did either. Years later, when I was deciding on a name for my daughter, who was to be born in the middle of July, the black-eyed Susans were again in full bloom in my backyard. What do you think I named her? Well, what else could you name a beautiful little black-eyed girl? Susan is her middle name, and she still has those beautiful black eyes. And a little info about the poet's Narcissus, Narcissus poeticus. Carl Linnaeus, the Swedish botanist known as the father of modern taxonomy, named the Narcissus poeticus as he felt that it was the flower that inspired the ancient Greek poets and the legend of Narcissus. Narcissus was the Greek hero who fell in love with his own reflection in a pool of water and was doomed to remain forever gazing at it. The poet's Narcissus is characterized by white petals and a small yellow cup, which has a darker outside edge. It is the cup with a contrasting edge that gives rise to the other common name of pheasant's eye, as this bird has a similar ring around its own eye. The bulbs bloom in mid-spring and are one of the few bulbs that will reliably bloom with very little cold weather. Gardeners who live in areas where temperatures rarely fall below 40 degrees Fahrenheit can enjoy these bulbs. Plant dormant bulbs in well-drained, neutral soil in the autumn, and they will reward you with the cheery blossoms come spring. Many varieties naturalize and form stunning clumps of flowers. Divide in the fall after foliage died back. It needs full sun and grows to a height of 12 to 18 inches, and the spacing needs to be 9 to 12 inches. And from Carrots Love Tomatoes and Roses Love Garlic by Louise Rioti, here's some info about licorice. The wild licorice of North America is Glycyrrhiza lepidota. From licorice roots, we get a valuable flavoring material that is 50 times as sweet as sugar. But oddly, although sweeter than sugar, licorice has the power to quench thirst. In 1951, it was discovered that licorice root contains the female sex hormone estrogen, used in the treatment of menopausal problems. Chewing a licorice stick helps those who wish to stop smoking. Even the fibers that remain after the licorice is extracted from the roots are valuable. They are used in making firefighting foam, box board, insulation board, and other products. And now information about your primrose. In summer, this flower has intense cerise flowers with a yellow eye. The plant likes full sun or partial shade, and wet feet. It grows well with candy tuft, pansies, calendulas, and violas. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until the next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.